1 Kings chapter 24,
verse 24.
And there were also Sodomites in the land, and they did according to all the abominations of the nations which Yahweh cast out before the children of Israel. You may be seated. I was wrong. I said that the only statue that would not be taken down by the, quote, protesters, unquote, was Albert Pike. But it was. Quote, unquote, protesters toppled the only statue of the Confederate general in the nation's capital and set it on fire on Juneteenth, the day marking the end of slavery in the United States, amid continuing anti-racism demonstrations following the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Well, that's not true, but we'll see why. Cheering, quote-unquote, demonstrators jumped up and down as the 11-foot statue of Albert Pike, wrapped with chains, wobbled on its high granite pedestal before falling backward, landing in a pile of dust. Quote-unquote, protesters then set a bonfire and stood around it in a circle as the statue burned, chanting, quote, no justice, no peace, unquote, and, quote-unquote, no racist police. Eyewitness accounts and videos posted on social media indicated that police were on the scene but didn't intervene. President Donald Trump quickly tweeted about the toppling, calling out D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser and writing, quote, the D.C. police are not doing their job as they watch a statue being ripped down and burned. These people should be immediately arrested. A disgrace to our country, unquote. The Pike statue has been a source of controversy over the years. The former Confederate general was also a longtime influential leader of the Freemasons, who revere Pike and paid for the statue. Pike's body is interred at the D.C. headquarters of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, which also contains a small museum in his honor. Got a picture of him. There's the statue. It was toppled by the protesters and set on fire early Saturday, June 20th, 2020. The statue, dedicated in 1901, was in Judiciary Square, about half a mile from the U.S. Capitol. It was built at the request of Masons, who successfully lobbied Congress to grant them land for the statue if Pike would be depicted in civilian, not military, clothing. Well, they toppled a very good statue. That's very nice. There were several articles in the Cincinnati Inquirer that were disturbing to me since my last sermon, and there's been more since I wrote this sermon. The first one was from June 27, 2020, sports page, and an article entitled Clubhouse Allies. Reds pitchers use platforms for Black Lives Matter support. There it is. Front page of the sports page. There's a picture of the Reds pitcher, and there's the article. You can read the article if you want after the service. I'm quoting from the article. Cincinnati Reds pitcher Matt Bowman doesn't have a large social media platform. He has a little more than 2,000 followers on Twitter, with most of his tweets from 4 or 5 years ago. With people protesting around the country for racial equality, Bowman felt it was a moment when he needed to speak out. He was inspired by social media posts from outspoken black players around the league and wanted to publicly show support for them. He reached out to teammate Jesse Biddle, who had nearly 9,000 followers on Instagram, and a few other players about matching donations to social justice charities like the NAACP Equal Justice Initiative and the Southern Poverty Law Center, along with a cleanup fund in Minneapolis. I will stop reading from the article to make a few little comments. This article is about a Cincinnati Reds pitcher who was, quote-unquote, inspired. Not from anything that the Bible said, but from, quote, outspoken black players, unquote, who play in the American Professional Baseball League. So to show his support for racial justice, which implies that he feels there is a great injustice now, he, along with another pitcher, will match donations to social justice charities. But is the Southern Poverty Law Center ever called a social justice charity? Now back to the article. I think I've always seen myself as an ally to the Black Lives Matter movement. But I definitely never felt as motivated to speak my mind on a social platform before, Biddle said. I've always felt motivated in an interaction one-on-one, but I've definitely drawn the line on making it social, making it something that is outward-facing. That's just not okay anymore. Was there any fear of backlash for speaking out on social media? I've lost a couple hundred followers, Biddle said. I had some people in my direct messages telling me how I'm perpetuating some leftist propaganda. But I don't need them, right? They can take a walk. I'm standing up for what I believe in. I'm speaking out on something that I'm very passionate about, and I'm also just trying to spur a conversation. That's all this is about, just shining the light on what is racist America and what needs to change, unquote. Well, I make a little comment. What are the Reds pitcher's views on abortion? LGBTQ, race mixing, and et cetera, et cetera. He said that he always felt himself as a, quote, ally to the Black Lives Matter movement, unquote. Is he saying that he is in favor of the above anti-Christ views? He also said that I could take a walk. I think I will walk away from it. The article goes on and talks about what is happening in the National Basketball Association, where players wore I-can't-breathe shirts, and the National Football League, with Colin Kaepernick leading silent protest when he kneeled during the national anthem. I thought the article was out of place on the sports page and belonged on the pages of Pravda. Remember what charities the two Reds pitchers were matching donations to? One of them was the Southern Poverty Law Center. In the same newspaper, the very same newspaper. Look how this organization is involved in the next story. Same newspaper. Page 5A. Article entitled Controversial Group Partners with State on Faith Response. Right here. I'll quote a little bit from this article, and you can read this if you want. Quote, a group considered by some to be controversial partnered with the governor's office to offer guidance to the state's faith communities due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, what group was considered by some to be controversial? I'll go back to the article. The website for Citizens for Community Values, CCV, previously held controversial statements about same-sex marriages, which led to the Southern Poverty Law Center to name it a hate group in 2015 and 2016 until the statements were removed in 2017. Why'd they remove the statements in 2017? I got a little spiel here about this article. Citizens for Community Values were called a hate group by the SPLC because of their statements against same-sex marriages. The president of the CCV called the Southern Poverty Law Center's agenda political, a frequent complaint of critics who say that it abuses its position as the nation's most prominent hate group watchdog. Why? To get money from liberal donors, unquote. Well, the third article occurred on Saturday, June 26, 2020, in the Cincinnati Inquirer on the front page. It's got a big picture of him. The article is entitled, along with a picture of Obafell. It's a long article. Landmark marriages marks 5 years. Obafell continues his fight for equality after Supreme Court's 2015 decision. There's his picture. And it's continued back here on this page here. It's fun reading the Communist Cincinnati Inquirer. The article is about Jim Obafell's marriage to John Arthur, who was gravely ill with Lou Gehrig's disease. Because Ohio at the time did not allow same-sex unions, the couple flew to Maryland to exchange vows. Arthur died of the disease 3 months later, and Obafell sued to be listed on the death certificate as Arthur's husband. The case was 1-6, argued together before the high court. Obafell was the lead plaintiff, meaning the case bore his name, though he was joined by dozens of other plaintiffs. Gerhard Stein, the attorney for Obafell, you remember him from my other sermons? Gerhard Stein? Recalled being in Washington, D.C. the day the ruling was announced. Get this. He called Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley with the news. Later that day, Cranley performed a public wedding to marry sodomite couples in downtown's Fountain Square, unquote. So the leftist communist media is bombarding its viewers, listeners, and readers constantly with its far-left positions. If a person or group says anything different to their positions, they are either shouted down. That happened in the council meeting where the mayor said the meeting is now over. Or censored. Eventually, there will be no opposition. Well, who should be the opposition? Who is supposed to be the opposition? It is the Church of our Savior. Let's go back to our introductory verse, 1 Kings 14:24. And there were also sodomites in the land. And they, now who's they referring to? The sodomites did according to all the abominations of the nations which Yahweh cast out before the children of Israel. What nations did he cast out? The Canaanite nations. There were also sodomites in the land, and they, the sodomites, did according to all the abominations of the Canaanite nations which Yahweh cast out before the children of Israel. What is the context of this verse? Is this statement good or evil or indifferent? This verse indicates that the Sodomites were evil because it says that the things which they did were identical to the same abominations that the Canaanites had done, which Yahweh God had cast out before he let the children of Israel in the promised land. In other words, the Sodomites were no better than the Canaanites in their actions, as they were doing the same thing. Now let's look at the previous two verses for some more information. So we'll look at 1 Kings chapter 14, verses 22 and 23, and see what we can gather from these two verses. Verse 22 says, "And Judah," that's the southern kingdom of Israel, "did evil in the sight of Yahweh, and they," Judah, "provoked him to jealousy with their sins, which they had committed above all that their fathers had done. For they also built them high places and images and groves on every high hill and under every green thing." And then comes verse 24. These two verses, along with verse 24, indicate there were eight sins mentioned that Judah committed during the time of Rehoboam's reign. Here they are listed. They did evil in the sight of Yahweh. They provoked him to jealousy. They committed worse sins than their fathers had. They built high places. They made images. They made groves. They became Sodomites. Committed all the abominations of the heathen. I wonder if we say that in today's world. Are we guilty of this? 20 years later, there was a third king of Judah. For 17 years, there was King Rehoboam, the first king. Then for 3 more years reigned King Abijam. The third king of Judah was Asa. Was Asa a good or a bad king? Well, let's read. 1 Kings 15, verse 11 and 12. "And Asa did that which was right in the eyes of Yahweh, as did David his father." So he did what was correct. I wonder what he did that was correct. "And he," that's King Asa, "took away the Sodomites out of the land and removed all the idols that his father had made." He drove the Sodomites out of the land. That was called right in the eyes of God. For around 20 years, there were Sodomites in the land of Judah. It was called one of the sins of Judah. Then King Asa, who had the third longest reign of all the kings of Judah, took away the Sodomites out of the land. Sodomites in the land was a sin. Sodomites out of the land was considered good. Walt Gittings' brother, who was the financial head of the LGBTQ community in New York, said that it was okay if he was called a homosexual or a gay, but not a sodomite. Why? He was asked. Because sodomite is a biblical term. Should the church approve of homosexuals? So why is there now a prevalent movement in the Christian church that says that God approves of homosexuals? There is a 21-year-old who has left college and is speaking up about the issue of being, quote-unquote, gay. He is gay, and he has written a book saying that the Bible is in favor of a loving relationship of a man with a man or a woman with a woman. I listened to an 1-hour-and-7-minute lecture that he gave in a church in Wichita, Kansas. His name is Matthew Vines, and you can listen to it too. Just type in Matthew Vines, Google it, and you'll get the message. I have a following quote from his message, from this particular message that he gave. Quote, this is a pretty interesting quote. We've all heard that Leviticus is where the Bible straight up says that homosexual behavior is an abomination. Amen. And yes, it does. It also says that homosexuals should receive the death penalty. It's got three explanation points after it. It also says the same thing about eating pork or shellfish, charging interest on loans, and a whole bunch of other restrictions that were a part of the Old Testament law code, unquote. I make a little comment after that statement. Matthew admits that Leviticus condemns homosexual behavior, eating certain foods, charging interest on loans, plus other restrictions. Now, he's gay, so we know he believes this is not correct. How does he say that they are not now in effect? Watch closely. Back to his 1 hour, 7 minute speech. Quote, but for Christians, the Old Testament doesn't, dare I say shouldn't, settle any issue because Romans chapter 10 verse 4 says that Christ is the end of the law, which is probably why most Christians today eat, he left out the word all meat, use credit cards, wear makeup, and support equality for women. Because as Hebrews 8:13 says, the old law is obsolete and aging, unquote. Well, let's look at what these verses say. Leviticus 18, verse 22. Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is an abomination. Well, he said that was no problem. Leviticus 20:13. If a man also lie with mankind as he lieth with a woman, both of them have committed abomination. They shall surely be put to death, their blood shall be upon them. Now here's the verse he used to disqualify everything. Romans 10:4. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone that believeth. And then he added Hebrews 8:13, in that he saith, now he left this part out, a new covenant he had made the first old. Now that which decayeth and waxeth old is ready to vanish away. He just, go back. He just read the last part of the verse. He didn't read the first part.
Well,
Matthew Vines interprets these verses the way that most Christians interpret them. He says that the law of God was done away with the crucifixion of Jesus the Christ. All the laws, statutes, and commandments given in the Old Testament are done away. All the laws that are given in the Old Testament no longer exist. Since they no longer exist, Christians no longer must obey a non-existent law. The Christians, which are made up of all races, which now are part of the new covenant, which is based on love, not hate. This is exactly what the Baptist church that I was brought up in taught. Jesus Christ put away the law of God on the cross when he died. We Gentiles no longer must keep the quote-unquote Jewish law. Well, how would you answer him? Is the old law or is it the old covenant that is obsolete and aging? And who was the new covenant made with? The non-Jews? Or the house of Judah and the house of Israel? Was the law of God totally done away with at the death of our Savior? If it was, then there's no need for the Old Testament except for the history that it gives. But is there another view? The wilderness encampment of Israel. Let's just look at this picture a second. Three tribes here, three tribes on all sides. What's that? There was a flame of fire that went up at night, and the daytime it was a cloud smoke. Does anybody know what was right here in the tabernacle? What was underneath the flame and underneath the cloud? Does anybody know? Yahweh. God himself. He's right there. When the cloud got up and left, what did they do? They moved. When it stopped, they camped. That's phenomenal. I don't know. And every day, manna came on the ground. They got their food 6 days out of seven. What a story. They come to a river, and the river just departs. They go over the river. What is the significance of this picture? What one nation on the earth had this encampment? Well, anybody that's read the Bible knows that it's Israel. Who was beneath the fire that reached up to the heavens? It was Yahweh God. What was he doing there? He was king. He was king over these people. Now, is there a tabernacle anymore? Is there a temple anymore? Why not? Where were these two important buildings? Wasn't Israel, the people of the covenant, the only people that had God as their king, with his throne in the inner part of the tabernacle and later the temple? For 40 years they traveled with either the cloud or the flame leading them, nobody else. When it stopped, they made camp. When it moved, they moved. God was with them, dwelling inside the holy place of the tabernacle. It so frightened the Canaanite nations that they were in fear of the Israelites as to what they would do next. Today, neither the tabernacle nor the temple is in existence. Don't you think that all the laws and commandments about the tabernacle and temple, with the priests that served at them, are now expired too? The various animal sacrifices for sins, the priestly duties, the regulations for priests, for example, are now expired. Not all the law, just the sacrificial law has expired. Jesus the Christ, our Passover Lamb, ended all sacrificial animal offerings for sin. The laws about interest on loans to brothers, eating pork and other scavengers, and sodomites still apply. Now here's a very interesting little piece here. The war between the states was not to abolish black slavery. How many times have we heard this in the last few weeks? The Civil War was to end slavery. No, it wasn't. The war between the states. Where'd it go? The war between the states was fought to create slavery, not end it. What? Lincoln issued an executive order to invade the South and stop black slavery. Do you know that Lincoln's own wife owned black slaves? His own Republican Party leaders owned black slaves. His executive order applied only to black slave owners in parts of the debt-free South that his armies had conquered by 1863, it did not apply to slave owners in the North. The war was instigated to destroy the South's political power, which resulted from the wealth created from its debt-free, self-sufficient farm system, which had been accumulated in the prior 150 years. Lincoln's conquering armies burned businesses, cities, towns, houses, and mills, forcing the bankrupt, desperate, slaughtered survivors to borrow money to survive. Usury banks were established throughout the conquered South
in 1865. That means there weren't usury banks there before.
Usury banks were established throughout the conquered South in 1865 to provide desperately needed money. These newly provided usury banks were the only source of money. Usury, lending 10 and requiring a non-existent 11 to be repaid, is a capital crime. Ezekiel 28, verse 13 says, "If he has given forth upon usury, he shall surely die." The conquered and devastated South, deprived of its vote, was forced to borrow usury money, making them perpetual slaves. Proverbs 22, verse 7. The borrower is slave to the lender. Usury's agents conquer and enslave nations having wealth. They instigate wars, defeat selected prey, create poverty and want, station armies to prevent rebellion, and force the chain of usury about their necks of the conquered, keeping them perpetual slaves. See, the North was already slaves. The South wasn't. Oh, those dirty usury banks. Oh, what did Jim tell us about Germany? They got rid of the usury bank. Usury is Esau's principal weapon of war. It forces the love of money. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10, the love of money is the root of all evil. Esau and his agents force this love on those he conquers. Conquered nations love money. Unquote. This is an email from Richard Hoskins. So, is interest on loans done away with? I don't care what the church says. It's not done away with. Compare what happened in South Africa, Great Britain, Germany, Iraq, Libya, etc., etc. Now I will talk to you about Black Lives Matter. One recent assertion is, you can't be Christian unless you affirm that Black Lives Matter. On the surface, it seems obvious that to properly represent a position that states all men are created in the image of God, you would indeed need to affirmatively declare Black Lives Matter. But all men are not created in the image of God. But who started Black Lives Matter? Do you know? When did the organization begin? What was his or her name or names? What event triggered the movement? I would think the one thing that we would know was that it was a black person who started Black Lives Matter. And we would be correct. The Black Lives Matter movement emerged in 2013 amid anger over the acquittal of George Zimmerman, the Florida man who shot and killed 17-year-old Trayvon Martin in 2012. The network of chapters was formed in 2014 following what the organizers called Ferguson October, a national mobilization in response to the shooting death of 18-year-old criminal Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Who were the organizers? What job did Obama have when he was a young man? Wasn't he a social organizer? And isn't organizing a tactic of the Communist Party? Isn't social organizing now the basis of the Democratic Party? I will quote a speaker at the Republican National Conference about Hillary Clinton. Quote, this is at the Republican National Conference. Here's what the man said. Now, one of the things that I have learned about Hillary Clinton is that one of her heroes, her mentors, was Saul Alinsky, who happens to be Jewish. He didn't put that part in. And her senior thesis was about Saul Alinsky, this Jew. This was someone that she greatly admired, and that affected all of her philosophy subsequently. Now, interesting enough, let me tell you something about Saul Alinsky. He wrote a book called Rules for Radicals. Who's burning down these places in America? Radicals. On the dedication page, it acknowledges Lucifer, the original radical who gained his own kingdom. He goes on and says, this is a nation where every coin in our pocket and every bill on our wallet says, in God we trust. So, he says to the Republican National Convention, are we willing to elect someone as president who has as their role model somebody who acknowledges Lucifer? Think about that, unquote. I make a little comment. Black Lives Matter is following the outline of Saul Alinsky, too. They are organizers. That is what the government of Lucifer is called, communism. Now, there have been a whole bunch of entertainers as well as ball players such as LeBron James, Drew Brees, Brett Favre, and see the beginning of this article, officers of corporations as well as politicians, etc., who have given money to Black Lives Matter. I think we should stop going to those stores and stop buying those products. We won't cause them to go bankrupt, at least it'll hurt them a little bit. All three founders were supporters of communist Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Two of his three founders admitted in a taped interview that they are both trained Marxists. Black Lives Matter is an extremely well-funded organization supported by many politically correct individuals and organizations. Now, if you are trained by a Marxist, what are you trained for? A Marxist is a communist, and a Marxist will train you to be a communist. Should we follow individuals who have been trained by a communist? Now, I put this up because I don't say I can miss it. There's the clenched fist. The common sign of the race, clenched fist, Black Lives Matter. Now I'll give a little thing about Black Lives Matter. BLM, Black Lives Matter, is an evil and demonic hate group. With a popularity rating of 62%, which is more than 20% higher than the president's. In compliance to BLM, many pastors are telling their white congregations to own up to their white privilege. They are falling for the leftist bogus guilt trip. Black Lives Matter is an extreme racist and anti-American hate group. Years ago, BLM declared war on cops and white people. They marched down a New York street chanting, quote, "What do we want? Dead cops. When do we want it? Now," unquote. They are like the weather underground, except they are using race to bring forth their Marxist revolution. Not climate control or illegal immigration, but race. The BLM is building a movement that can be used by many black folk. In an interview with CNN, the Communist News Network, anchor Jake Tapper, Parisi Cullors, said that Trump should not be elected president in November, but, quote, "he should resign right now," unquote. The Marxists, who are communists, want Trump out of office right now. They are using race to advance a Marxist revolution. They don't care about race. They don't care about black lives. For a look at retired Officer Dorn, a 77-year-old who was shot during the Minneapolis riots. No one from BLM went to his funeral. Not even Al Sharpton said one sentence about it, let alone give the eulogy. They are using race as the vessel through which to advance a Marxist revolution. Most Christians and the general public are unaware that Black Lives Matter also supports black lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender-led groups. Why? Well, one reason is that two of the three founders, maybe all three, are queer. They are lesbians. In fact, one of them is married to a transgendered male. I had to look that up. That's a female to a male. She married this guy, or this woman, who became a guy. Should we follow what these queers are telling us? Should a Christian believe a racial stranger who is a lesbian, one of which is married to a transgendered male, or should they believe what our God has told us in his holy word? The first one. Patrisi Cullors, born June 20th, 1983, is an American artist and a communist activist. Cullors is an advocate for prison abolition. Oh, get rid of all the prisons in Los Angeles. And a co-founder of Black Lives Matter movement. She also identifies as a queer activist because she is a queer. The sought-after activist was born in a poor family and grew up living below the poverty line. She was raised in a neighborhood in the San Fernando Valley. Her family forced her to leave home at the age of 16 when she identified herself as queer in front of her Jehovah Witness family. I ask you a question. She said, "I'm queer." The family who were Jehovah Witnesses says, "Get out of here." Was the family right or wrong? Just a question. Later, she started activism while young by enrolling in the Bus Riders Union. Though indulged in the civil rights social movement, she gave continuity to her studies. She graduated from the University of Southern California, Los Angeles, with a bachelor's degree in religion. and philosophy. Besides her international activist movements and campaigns, she currently is a teacher at Otis College of Art and Design, and here's a picture of her right there. The second person, Alicia Garza, born January 4th, 1961, is an American civil rights activist and writer known for co-founding the International Black Lives Matter movement. She has organized, they're all organizers, around the issues of health, student services and rights for domestic workers, ending police brutality, anti-racism, and violence against transgender and gender non-conforming people of color. I don't know why she's not against white people, but people of color. Alicia Garza was born in Oakland, California. She grew up as Alicia Swartz in Marin County in a mixed race and mixed religion household with a Jewish stepfather and an African-American mother. The family ran an antiques business, assisted later by her younger brother, Joey. In her teens, Alicia engaged in activism promoting school birth control. Enrolling in the University of California, San Diego, she continued her activism by joining the Student Association and calling for higher pay for the university's janitors. In her final year of college, she helped organize the first Woman of Color Conference, a university-wide convocation held at UCSD in 2002. She graduated in 2002 with a degree in anthropology and sociology. That's not all. In 2003, she met Malachi Garza, 24, a transgendered man and also a community activist. In 2004, Alicia came out as queer to her family. In 2008, she married the transgendered man Malachi and took the name Garza, settling in Oakland. I'm sure you want to see their pictures. There's Alicia, and then here is the transgendered man she married, the husband of Alicia, and he is a trip. You ought to hear him speak. The third person, the third founder, Opa Tometi. Now, there's a name for you. Born August 15, 1984, is a Nigerian, American, black human rights activist, writer, strategist, and community organizer. She is a co-founder of Black Lives Matter. She is a former executive director of United States' first national immigration rights organization for people of African descent, the Black Alliance for Just Immigration. Tometi brought attention to the racial inequities faced by black people. Before that, Tometi was an active community organizer in her hometown, advocating for human rights issues. She has campaigned for advancing human rights, migrant rights, and racial justice worldwide. And then we got a picture of her. Anybody know who that man is? He's the Venezuelan dictator. Venezuelan dictator. All three founders of the Black Lives Matter movement have openly shared their desires to end capitalism. In their online articles, videos, and interviews, all three allude to concepts that originate in socialism, communism, or Marxism. Remember, Marx was the son of a Jewish rabbi. Cullors worked in jail and policing activism as founder of Dignity and Power Now. Her philosophy rests on the concept of prison abolition and reparations in financial composition and land redistribution. She promotes BDS, the leftist anti-Semitic boycott, divest, and sanction movement, both as the signatory to public statements supporting Palestinians and as in articles she's written. She speaks eloquently about people's-led socialist movements in South America and once was mentored by Eric Mann, a former agitator of the Weather Underground domestic terrorism organization. Garza started her organizing career working in abortion advocacy before moving on to groups like NDWA, SOUL, and POWER, which merged with other groups, which focus on worker and housing activism via anti-capitalistic activism. Opal Tometi focused almost exclusively on immigration activism. She has spoken at left forum events, shared a stage with Venezuelan dictator Nicolas Maduro, who helped oversee quote unquote fair elections in Venezuela in 2015. Virtually all the spaces Black Lives Matter and its founders inhabit are associated with leftist or openly socialist workers' movements. All three women have spoken at Left Forum, a think tank for socialists, which engages high-profile communists, socialists, and Marxists as keynote speakers. Speakers include luminary census Marxist Silva Federici and Francis Fox Piven. Black Lives Matter has sponsored town hall meetings with leftist extremists. Even the leftist agitation group Southern Poverty Law Center finds objectionable. They've written touching eulogies for mass murderers who brutally surpassed Christianity. They've recreated narratives to characterize a law enforcement officer as inherently aggressive and deception, even when forensics have shown their position to be inaccurate. I wrote a little conclusion to this. I said, in other words, they are liars. While there are few criminal justice reforms needed, they are not what BLM is advocating. The Bible, for the Christian, has the answer to crime. Not a bunch of queers, Marxists, and political and social radicals who have hijacked the Democratic Party and are attempting the overthrow of the United States government. My conclusion. Our nation is being attacked. It is in a revolution. We have not been serving our God. In fact, we don't even know who our God is. We don't even know who we are. That is, most of us. Does the Bible teach us that the interest on loans is wrong when it's made to brothers? Sure it does. Does the Bible teach us that eating pork is an abomination to Almighty God? You better believe it does. Does the Bible teach us that sodomite, homosexual, lesbian, gays, and transgenders are committing criminal offenses? Yes, it does. Does the Bible teach us that killing the unborn baby is murder? Yes, it does. You tell me then, why would a Christian support Black Lives Matter? At least two of the three founders are queer. One of the three is married to a transgendered male. Two of the three are trained Marxists. All three are in favor of abortion. All three are organizers and communists. BLM is not about race. It's not about climate control. It's not about illegal immigration. It's not about taking down statues. It's mainly about having a communist revolution. It's having Trump resign his office right now. How much money do you think the three co-founders have? They now have multi-billions of dollars. Follow the money. To be continued, blessed be the Lord God of Israel.